Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Craig Merriweather about his book, Past Lives Guidebook: Discover the Healing Power of Past Life Regression Therapy. Craig is a leader in the field of past life regression and hypnotherapy. He offers one-on-one past life regression sessions, as well as workshops and multi-day retreats, both nationally and internationally. Craig is a graduate of the renowned Hypnotherapy Academy of America, where he completed 500 hours of classroom-style training to become a certified clinical hypnotherapist. Craig is also the creator of the Mind Mastery Blueprint and the Life Transformation Kit, and he is a featured author in the New York Times best-selling book, Pearls of Wisdom, 30 Inspirational Ideas to Live Your Best Life Now. Hi, Craig. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hey, Simon, it's great to be here. I know that sounds a little cliche, but I've been really looking forward to our conversation just because of your show and the other guests you've had. I've been really looking forward to this. And I know you've kind of have your feet in the past life world, so it's going to be a great conversation.
We're going to be talking about your book. It's called Past Lives Guidebook: Discover the Healing Power of Past Life Regression Therapy. So can I ask, first of all, how did you get into it?
Well, I always had kind of a spiritual side to myself that was quite prominent, even growing up as a little kid. I grew up in, Craig Merriweather. I don't think you get more Protestant than that, more English, Scottish and Irish, Welsh than that. But grew up in San Diego, California, but the church that was closest to us, you know, this is the 60s and 70s, so you went to church. And the church closest to us, that was even within walking distance, was an Episcopal church. And I don't know, I just really like the Episcopal church. It's kind of Catholicism light. And you have the robes and the candles and the ceremonies and the rituals. I also went to a Baptist school from 6th grade to 12th grade, which is an entirely different philosophy of Christianity, and even those two kind of different ways of church, I guess to say, is butt heads, the Baptists and the Episcopals. So it was a little bit confusing at times, but I always had this kind of interest in the spiritual and in finding out more and understanding more. And I was kind of confined to that little world of, I guess that's a big world, but that world of Christianity. And it's when I went to UC Santa Cruz, University of California, Santa Cruz, that my world really opened up because that's the Bay Area, San Francisco, the San Jose, Silicon Valley, Cupertino, Mountain View, Stanford. And so there is just filled with people from, different cultures, different ethnicities. And I just fell in love with just learning about other people's lives and how they view spirituality. So, there's so much music and dance, and there's all these festivals and you go take a Zen meditation class, and then you can go do an African dance class. And then I was playing drums for a Middle Eastern dance class. And all this was converging with not only the music and the dance and the food, but also the philosophies and their beliefs and their spirituality. And there's in Santa Cruz at that point, and there's still to a certain extent, but back in the 1990s, there's like 7 or 8 bookstores just in that little downtown area. And you just there's so much information, so much to learn. And so my worldview started to expand, and things that I didn't really understand or know about, like reincarnation and things like past life regression and other kind of beliefs and philosophies and theories, started to inform how I saw the world. And So that there's that aspect of it. There's also the aspect of just my own hurt and pain that I wanted to deal with in life. Struggled a lot with depression and anxiety. And just to kind of make a long story a little bit shorter, what I found due to just kind of the research and books I was reading and people I was listening to in terms of teachers, you know, and I'm talking like self-growth kind of people, personal development, like Tony Robbins and things. A lot of people were mentioning hypnotherapy. And so I tried it and it really, really helped me. It really helped kind of resolve and heal a lot of the hurt and pain I had been holding on to. And it just fascinated me, this idea of accessing the subconscious mind to create healing. And I just, you know, as life moves on, I got more interested in that until at one point I decided to pivot and I wanted to become a hypnotherapist myself and help people in this way using the power of their own subconscious mind. This isn't talk therapy. Hypnotherapy is not talk therapy. It's not psychotherapy, which can be very helpful and very useful and very healing. But something different is allowing the person to access their own subconscious mind to resolve these issues in a way that is helpful and healing for them. And these two worlds kind of start to converge, hypnotherapy and spirituality. You know, back in the, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, you didn't have access to like ayahuasca ceremonies and all these other methods of maybe attaining some spiritual insights. And one way to really move into that altered state of consciousness and in a safe and gentle way was hypnotherapy. And so in kind of deciding to pivot later in life and start working as a hypnotherapist, I wanted the best training, I wanted the best of the best. And so looking around and what was possible here in the United States, I found the Hypnotherapy Academy of America, which is, I think at this point, been around about 40 years. But one aspect of it, not only is it a great training, it's 500 hours of hypnotherapy training, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. So this is intensive training. This isn't just like you go into university and you're taking a history class from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. This is 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And then there's study groups on the weekend and homework and practice sessions. And so it's real intensive training for 2.5 months. And the last 2 weeks is focused solely on past life regression and spirit world regression and natal regression and connecting with spirit guides and things like that. So you get this core foundation here at the Hypnotherapy Academy of America. You get this core foundation of clinical hypnotherapy, working with people to deal with trauma and their hurt and their pain, and even physical issues, going into medical hypnosis and dealing with physical pain and healing acceleration and boosting your immune system and things like that. So you have this great foundation of clinical hypnotherapy, kind of this current life boots, you know, on the ground here on planet Earth, clinical hypnotherapy training. And then the last 2 weeks is the more spiritual side of it. And it was an extraordinary training. And since then, of course, I've gone on to, you know, study with other people and train with other people. But I don't know, maybe to wrap it all up, it was just like my own interest in learning more about spirituality led me to eventually write this own book due to my own interest and curiosity and work with people with past life regression.
What was your first past life regression like?
Well, first one I ever experienced was at the school, because strangely enough, I live right next door to Sedona, Arizona. So I live in Flagstaff, Arizona. It's a beautiful mountain town, world's largest pine forest. And we're up here at 7,000 feet, so it gets cold. We get snow. We have the beautiful San Francisco peaks that go up to 12,000 feet. It's a beautiful place to live. And we are about 90 minutes south of the Grand Canyon. And we're about, maybe 30 miles east of Sedona. And if people recognize that name Sedona, they know it's a hotbed of spiritual people living in this beautiful red rock country with all sorts of kind of disease, this energy of spirituality in this place. But there's also a kind of, a standoffishness about it, that if I was to do a past life regression, the obvious choice would be, okay, well, go find somebody in Sedona. And it didn't feel right to me. And I never found anybody that I felt comfortable working with. And really my first one was at the school, because, you know, you sit in a classroom with all these other people, these 25, 30 other people, you're learning about these, you know, techniques and the scientific validity behind them. Maybe you'll see a demonstration at the front of class, and then you break up into small groups with people and work with each other to really practice this stuff. And so my first one was at the school. And in and of itself, I can't remember because it was so long ago, and I've done so many since then. In fact, just this past summer, I was at a workshop with Brian Weiss, the Brian Weiss, and doing some past life regression retreat with him hosting. 700 people all here in this wonderful place in upstate New York at the Omega Institute. And it's fascinating. And so in and of itself, I can't remember the first one I ever did because of just so many. And I'm sure I have notes somewhere in a box somewhere. But it wasn't too long ago that, considering how interested I was, and it's a little bit head scratching now that you asked the question, that I didn't do it until I got to the school.
So there's a question you ask in your book, which is, how many times must we reincarnate? And it's that thing where you say must. It's like we have to do it. What's your view on this?
I think maybe must might be some dramatic license on my part, because I don't know the rules behind it, but it seems like that we're here to learn and to grow and to develop. And this isn't just me guessing. A lot of the work that I do in my practice with when I work with people comes from the research of Michael Newton and his books, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls. And, you know, just real quick about Dr. Michael Newton, he passed away about, I think, 2011. But in 1969, working as a psychotherapist, he thought it best to, when working with this person, to use some hypnotherapy and regress them back to childhood to deal with some traumas, deal with some issues, resolve some hurt. Well, he regressed them, but the guy kept going. He didn't stop at childhood. He didn't stop at being a newborn. He didn't stop being in utero. He kept going, and he ended up in spirit world, or the soul realm, or that life between lines here on earth, when we're just spirit, we're just soul. And he had this experience up in the soul world and healed the issues that needed to be resolved. And this just utterly fascinated Michael Newton. And so he wanted to research this more. He started working with people, seeing if he could find a way to consistently get people back into that altered state of being up in the memory of soul world, or maybe you're really there, I don't know. And he started working with people through the 1970s and the 1980s. He worked with thousands of people over about two decades, because what he was finding is that people were having similar experiences of soul world. You know, there's no internet, there's no texting, there's no cell phones in the 1970s, 1980s. People didn't know each other, couldn't communicate with each other. They were coming from different backgrounds, different cultures, different ethnicities, different age groups from around the country. And they're having similar experiences. And so he started researching, writing it down. And that's the basis of the first book that came out in 1992, Journey of Souls. Did another decade's worth of research with thousands more people. And the second book, Destiny of Souls. And so what comes from all that information of thousands and thousands of people having similar experiences is that we're here to learn and to grow. We're here to develop as souls. Sort of like going, at least here in America, we have, you know, first grade through 12th grade, high school, and it's sort of like you're learning and growing. And if you looked at each grade as a life, it's like, well, you learn what you're supposed to learn, and then you move to the next grade or the next life, and you continue your growth and you're learning, maybe all the way to getting your master's degree in, you know, love or compassion or empathy or whatever it is you need to learn as a soul. And so this idea that we must come back, I don't know if it's a must or not. It seems like when I've worked with people and asked them, sometimes it's like, yeah, it's my choice to come back. When I'm asking about this specific life here in the 2000s, I said, well, why this life? Why this place? Why this body? Why are you playing this role this time? Why these parents? What are you supposed to learn? How are you supposed to grow? What do you need to become because your parents are the way they are? Who's playing what role? Are they part of your soul group up there in spirit world? Is it part of your soul family or the neighboring soul groups? Again, all information coming from the Michael Newton books. And, you know, sometimes people say, well, yeah, I want to come back. I want to learn more. And other people say, yeah, I'm kind of feeling like I'm being suggested very, very sternly that it's time to return and to do more growth and learning. So there may be parts of this where there are souls that, you know, no, they don't come to Earth. Maybe they go to other worlds, other planets. I've worked with people, past life regressions, where they aren't on Earth. And it's extraordinary and quite fascinating, quite interesting to have them experience another world, another realm. Maybe there are other quote unquote jobs that souls need to do. But in terms of when I'm saying must, I'm speaking of us here on Earth, that we must, maybe come back for that growth. I think once we decide, okay, well, we want to learn and grow and let's start in first grade and let's go all the way up. It's like, well, you can't, once you're on the roller coaster, you're not stopping it. And I think that's where that word must comes from. We're here to become better souls. I mean, I was going to say better humans, but obviously this is kind of the jacket we're wearing, the role we're playing. It's sort of like when I talk to people about this, like, I'm happy to talk to people on one-on-one if you want to do a Zoom call or a phone call or just email back and forth about this stuff. But I sort of look at it like your town has a local theater troupe, a community theater troupe of 8 or 9 actors. And every few months they do 6 plays a year. And they start off in January. They do the January play, and they beforehand they decide who's going to play what role, who's going to play what story are we going to tell? What are these characters going to learn? Who plays what role? What time period are we going to decide this is? Are we going to, you know, if you ever seen those Shakespearean plays where they change the time that Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes movie, Romeo and Juliet, that was set in the 1990s, which was modern times when it came out. There's that Ian McKellen, Richard III movie that I think was supposed to be in the 1930s. So even if the story was based in the 1600s of Shakespearean time, why not change it? Is that possible? And so you're looking at this theater group and they're deciding on the story, the play they're going to do. Who's going to play what role? What costumes are we going to wear? Where are we going to set it? Are we going to, you know, are we going to change things around? And then they perform this play and these characters grow and they learn and they grow and they learn. And then they take a break. And then in March, they do a second play. They decide what story they're going to tell. Who's going to play what roles? You know, if you and me, Simon, maybe in that first play, we're brothers. And in the second play, we're mother and son. And in the third play, we're romantic partners. And, you know, we're the same soul. I'm still me and you're still you. It's just we're playing different worlds. We're wearing different costumes for that learning and growth. And I think to a certain extent, maybe not all souls have to do this learning and growth or come to Earth to, you know, live these lives to develop. Maybe there's other quote-unquote jobs that are necessary up in soul world. But I think once you kind of get on the roller coaster of Earth or even other worlds, you're there until you finish. The growth you need to do and then move on to, I don't know, whatever comes after your master's degree. But maybe then you become the teachers or something. Or maybe there's even a different level to go to. Maybe this whole thing of going through these lives to learn and grow, we're just getting to high school to graduate. And then what's beyond high school? I don't know.
Yeah, it might be a thing where incarnations in the physical universe are just a tiny part of our soul's evolution, and it's not all there is.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be just a tiny little blip. You know, if you can see it as if we live to be 100 years old, you know, this learning and growth we're doing as souls, maybe that's just getting us to being 18 years old and getting out of school, you know? And then what? What happens after you get out of the school? You move out of your home, you know, move out of your parents' house. You know, I think we're just getting a tiny little bit of the picture. I think we can access these different realms, the spirit realm, and access these past life memories. But I think in and of itself, it's just a quick peek behind the curtain. And that may be just because of, you know, this 3D brain of ours can only handle so much information, can only pull in so much of that 5D information and try to transform it into 3D information. So maybe, you know, we can only access a little bit of what's on the other side. But, I certainly don't think we have all the answers. I think it's like that story of the four blind men and the elephant. And one thinks they're, you know, touching a snake. Another thinks they're touching a tree trunk. Another thinks they're touching a rope. And they just don't understand that there's an elephant in the room.
So what's your view on what actually does reincarnate? Is it that you, Craig, and me, Simon, it's us, but when we were reborn, we've just forgotten the previous life? Or is it that we carry on in eternity and our soul puts another part of itself into the next life?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. There's certainly this veil of amnesia that seems to come down. I think kids can access it very well. The Dr. Ian Stevenson books, where he did a lot of research looking into reincarnation. And this is a little bit of two different things we're talking about here: reincarnation and past life memories. Past life memories, I think the analogy of the plays and the theater group is a pretty decent one. Not the greatest, but I think in terms of we're the same person, we're just playing different roles and different stories. I think that's a great analogy for how past lives, when we access past life memories, works. But in terms of reincarnation, now we're looking at we're coming back as the same person over and over again. Now we're still, again, the same soul, the same spirit, however you want to describe it. But in terms of past lives, I think we're just wearing different costumes, playing different roles, whereas reincarnation, we seem to be, you know, if somebody's experiencing that, they're the same person, if that makes any sense, or they're accessing the information. Again, there's like multiple ways of looking at this, like the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama is the same Dalai Lama as the first Dalai Lama, right? Just maybe a different body. But it's the same soul or the same spirit. It's the same entity, if that's a great way. And I explain it better in the book. But it's the reincarnation of the Dalai Lama is the same soul, same entity, spirit being as the first Dalai Lama. We're now the Tenzin Gyatso is the one right now who just turned 90 years old a little while ago. The 14th Dalai Lama is the same as the 13th, the 12th, the 11th, the 10th, all the way back to the first, it's the same one. But there are people who have reincarnation memories. And I don't know if they're necessarily that person or they're just accessing memories of that. And that's where it gets a little tricky and it gets a little mind-bendy. And I think we don't have the entire story. Again, we're just kind of blind people touching an elephant and getting a different idea of what it's about. So I think there is a possibility in terms of reincarnation and that experience that they are the person, like that soul played that role and they're doing it again, just again, like the Dalai Lama, or they're accessing, another memory, like a past life memory, or they're accessing somebody else's memory for some reason. Again, maybe for healing or for resolution in some way. And maybe that child, person, because it seems like children have a great ability to access this reincarnation information. Maybe that child is part of that person's soul group. There's this one, I forget his name. It's the book Soul Survivor. You can find this on Amazon. And it's the kid who was having all the nightmares about the World War II pilot. But he knew all this information about this guy's life and could pick out the people in the military that he was with and the kind of plane he had and all this. He knew all this stuff about World War II planes that a five-year-old shouldn't know. And again, is he that person who died in the plane crash in World War II? Or is he accessing these memories to resolve and heal for maybe his friend, his one of his the people in his soul group? And he came back specifically to help his soulmate, one of his soulmates or one of his soul family, someone in his soul group, finish that life and create resolution around it. And so is that kid who's in the Soul Survivor book, is he really the World War II pilot, or is he just accessing those memories in an extraordinarily detailed way in order to create healing for somebody else? And that's where it gets a little mind-bending, a little mind-twisty. It's fun to talk about, but I think at the end of the day, a lot of this raises more questions than it creates answers to.
And when those children talk about the past lives they're remembering, they do say it as, I did this or I did that or I lived there.
Yeah.
Some of the children have birthmarks that relate to past life injuries.
That's fascinating. Yeah, they'll have scars, they'll have birthmarks, kind of a series of moles or something. And when you look into it, it's like, that's where they got stabbed, that's where they got shot. So yeah, again, it's quite possible that, they are that person. They're accessing that role. But it gets a little mind-bendy because, again, it's not like specifically like the Dalai Lama where you're playing the same role over and over again. They're accessing information, and could part of that accessing the information manifest in a physical way, like a birthmark or a scar? And again, so is that a past life memory? Okay, let's go back to the Soul Survivor kid. I need to find that kid's name.
I think it's James Leninger.
Okay, that's right. That sounds right. Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you, Simon. So James, was he really the pilot and he's now here to resolve those issues, or is he doing it for his friend as a way to help out? Did he really experience that? So therefore it's more of a past life regression and reincarnating in that way to, heal that person or that experience, or is he doing it for his friend? But yeah, the crazy stories of, and a lot of that, gets talked about in the Ian Stevenson books about the birthmarks and the scars and things like that. And then they find out when they go to the village 100 miles away that, yeah, the person got stabbed, and died. And it's like exactly right there where that birthmark is. It's really crazy. And I think it's one of those things where you talk about it for 5 or 6 hours over a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or something and still not have any sort of resolution to, or any answers, definitive answers.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. Because it gets even more complicated with the idea there is no time in the afterlife. Mm-hmm. So your soul's experiencing all of these lives at the same moment.
Yeah, I use an analogy in the book, the Past Lives Guidebook, about, you know, when someone goes on to play a video game, like I see my son do this, he'll connect with his friends and say, okay, hey, at 5 p.m. my time, let's get on and we'll play. And so they all gather at the appropriate time, and they say, what do you want to do? It's like, well, let's play this game. Let's go through this storyline, and I'll play this character and you play that character, and I'll have these skills and talents and weaponry, and you be, you know, who do you want to play? And everybody organizes themselves in terms of what avatar they want to be and the story they're going to go and what they're going to learn and how they're going to develop and what kind of treasures are they going to go after. And then they play this game for maybe a few hours. And then it's like, okay, it was great. Nice seeing you. Let's take a break. Let's do this again on Thursday. And then they come back and they play maybe a totally different game. Well, what if my son was sitting at, you know, maybe see one of those donut desks where it's kind of like you sit in the middle and it's a round desk and you kind of twirl your chair around. What if there was like seven different computers and they're all playing video games at the same time? One video game was here in present time. The current time, one game was from the, like it was an American Civil War game from the 1860s. Another game was back in, 5,000 BC. Another game was in, you know, the 1600s during Shakespearean time. Another game is in the future, 3592. And they're all being played at the same time. It's just my son's focused on one computer. And so his attention, his consciousness is on this, but then he can move to another computer just to kind of turn his chair, focus on another game that's happening at the same time, even though it's a different time, future or past. It's all happening. It's all being played at the same time. He focuses on that to get information that he needs in the game, the current game that he's playing in present time. You know, and so it's possible that maybe all these lives are happening right now. And we're not accessing a memory, but we're just accessing, just parting the veil and looking at a parallel universe that just happens to be in a different time wearing different costumes, you know? And again, that's where it gets real mind-bending. It gets real mind-twisty when you start thinking about time and space and consciousness and memory and parallel universes, or is this a computer simulation that our reality is based upon? Basically, we're playing a big, huge video game here, or is it more of the holographic universe? And we have, you know, every cell of our body has the information of the entire universe in it, or is it something else entirely? It can get pretty crazy trying to figure it all out.
Because in your book, I think you mention alternate realities, and I think one of the examples is a lady called Nadia, where her past life was where electricity had not been discovered.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is that even a life that she lived on Earth, or is that even another world? There's an interesting concept that's kind of called Atlantis syndrome, and people have an experience of this extraordinary world of great intelligence and great spiritual beings, an extraordinary kind of water-like world. And the only thing they can relate it to is Atlantis, because they'd heard stories and maybe heard a little bit about it. Maybe they're very much interested in Atlantis and know a lot about it. But when you start asking them questions, because when you're doing a past life experience, you're having the past life regression, you and the guide are having a conversation, because it needs to be led and grown, and you want it for the recording so the person can listen to it later. And so even though you're in this altered state of consciousness, you're in this trance state, you're still able to speak out loud and describe your experience, narrate what's happening. And it's done for safety and for making sure you're doing well and okay, especially if the situation becomes intense. The guide is there to help deal with that or resolve that or bring you out of that particular scene. But it's also so questions can be asked. Because sometimes when you're in that altered state of consciousness, that trance state, it's hard to kind of focus on what those questions were you want answered. So the guide is there to do that. And so when people are having this experience of Atlantis, you start asking questions. And you can gently find out that, well, okay, that's not actually Atlantis. That's actually an entirely different world. They're in a different planet, a different realm, different parallel universe, maybe, or however it all works. And the only way their kind of brain could comprehend what they were experiencing was, I guess this must be Atlantis. And so it's fascinating, the experiences people have, because it really shows you how much we actually don't really know and understand about this universe of ours, of not just Earth and the Milky Way and all that, but just of all of it, the spiritual side of it and being a soul as well. It's just so extraordinary that I think maybe we're seeing only 2-3% of it, and we really can't understand the entirety of it at all.
And also you mentioned something, is it the World War II anomaly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I haven't actually have had anybody experience this per se. I put it out there as a thought experiment, I guess, because if we are here to learn and to grow, and people have this idea that when we're doing past lives, they just go in a linear fashion. Like, okay, well, I started, my first past life was 5,000 BC, and I was helping to build the pyramids. And then, my next past life is 3 BC in another part of the world. And then I'm in the 500s, and then I'm in Shakespearean time in the 1600s. And then I'm in the 1800s in the New World. And then I'm in, the 1930s. And then I'm here in the 2000s. And my next one will be 30, 32. Well, there's no reason for it to be like that. Just like a theater group, you just don't start, well, we'll do some, Greek plays, and then we'll do some Shakespearean plays, and then we'll do some plays from the 1800s, and then we'll, you don't do it like that. You do what you feel would be most helpful for the theme of that year, or just what interests people, or what might interest the audience, what might interest the actors. And so it doesn't necessarily have to go in any sort of chronological order. And so why would that be for our past lives? So, I'm here in the 2000s as Craig Merriweather. Well, my next life may be back in the 1600s as Alice Johnson or something, So it doesn't have to necessarily go in any sort of order. And the idea around the thought experiment of the World War II idea is that, wouldn't it be helpful if we're here to learn and to grow and develop, to see a situation from different perspectives? And so you're an American soldier on Normandy Beach, storming Normandy Beach, in another life, you're a Nazi concentration camp guard. And in the next life, you're a Polish Jew trying to escape in the, mid 1930s. And then in another life, you're a mom with a baby running to the underground during the Blitzkrieg in Britain. And then another life, you are a Japanese American in an internment camp in Nevada. And another life, you're a Japanese soldier. So you have these experiences from all different aspects to really solidify that learning and that growth and development. Now, I can't prove that is what happened or that people have experienced that. That's the kind of thing where Unfortunately, that would create a lot of leading questions. Now I want you to experience this. So you don't want to lead people because that could create some, oh, well, this person wants me to create a story around now being a British mom running to the underground during the Blitzkrieg. So I need to create a story around that. And so may not necessarily be true because they are creating a story to, because you ask them a question in a trance state. So I don't know how one would be able to actually, you know, quantify that as a real experience people might have. But I think it's, an interesting thought experiment because, you know, why not return to the same experience as something as extraordinarily intense as World War II and see it from different vantage points, the good, the bad, and the ugly, again, for that learning, that growth and development.
So I was thinking about this, about whether sometimes the past lives we see in these sessions may be something that our subconscious mind has just made up as some kind of a metaphor for healing.
Yeah, yeah. And I go in deep in that in the book because, of course, that's a possibility of somebody, you know, some people, their big question is, and it's a legitimate, fair question of great value, how do I know I'm not making this up? And in and of itself, I don't know. Other than you are getting extraordinarily deep, detailed information about a past time that you could not have known in any other way other than you were there and you can prove it afterwards. That's what happened in the Brian Weiss book, Many Lies, Many Masters. That's what happened with Om Seti. You read her, you know, the biographies of her. She a British, a little girl in Britain, I think it was 1930s, something like that, fell down the stairs, I believe, got a traumatic brain injury. And when she woke up, she had all this detailed information about Egypt and this life she lived as an Egyptian, to the point where she actually moved to Egypt. And she would go to the British Museum, this is 1930s, and she would correct the docents about what they were talking about in the Egypt on the section on Egypt. And she eventually moved to Egypt. And according to the reports, according to the articles and to the biography, she'd, like, you know, at least on one occasion, went out to the desert with some archaeologists and pointed and say, there, that's where that village was. And they dug there and there was a village. And so you can, you know, get information as detailed as that, but oftentimes the information's a little more vague. And in and of itself, I don't think I could prove beyond the shadow of a doubt that that was a real past life that somebody experienced, that somebody's remembering, or is it a story, a metaphor, an allegory, some symbolism the subconscious mind is manifesting to create healing, to help resolve that pain. So what I tell people, at the end of the day, it's about the healing and the growth. I believe 100% that past lives are real, and we come back again and again, not only just through the decades of work, and the Michael Newton Institute is still going. They just released a book of research with people a couple of years ago. Michael Newton's Institute is still going strong. This is now 55 years of research of thousands and thousands of people, let alone the Brian Weiss book, just his first book, Many Lives, Many Masters, showing that past lives are real. And the reason why I believe the Many Lives, Many Masters book kind of proves it beyond a doubt is because Brian Weiss, still alive, I just did a workshop with him this last summer, 82, 83 years old at this point. He's a left brain analytical academic. That's his words. He got a chemistry degree from Columbia University, got his medical degree from Yale University. Man's a doctor. Turned to psychiatry. And he was working as the head of psychiatry at Mount Sinai in Miami, Florida, here in America. is the 1970s, 1980s. And in 1980, he was working with a woman with extreme anxiety, extreme issues around that. Worked with her for a year. Couldn't get any resolution. At one point, you say, I think we should do some hypnotherapy and do some regression back to childhood so you can get some resolution around it in that way. Well, kind of like the Michael Newton person, she kept going. She didn't go back to childhood. She didn't go back to being a newborn. She didn't go to being in utero. She went to a past life. And she went to a past life, I believe, in Egypt. And it resolved her issue. After a year of working with her, this past life regression resolved the issue. And so he didn't believe it. He just thought that it was a manifestation of the subconscious mind to finally find a way to resolve this issue. So they did some more past life regression therapy. She kept going back to go back to Egypt as she's getting extraordinary detail. Again, this is 1980. You know, our internet was the Encyclopedia Britannica books. That was it. That's all we could know. As she was getting PhD level information about Egypt that she couldn't have known unless she had been studying Egyptology for decades. So she's getting this detailed information that is verifiable, and Brian Weiss discusses it in detail in the book, but she also started getting detailed information about Brian Weiss's life, like his private life. She's getting downloading information about how he had a child die early on in life, like 1 year old or something tragic and horrible like that. Nobody, this is 1980, and there's no obituaries, obviously no information out there on the internet about it. Only a handful of people within the family, and of course the doctor in the hospital, only a handful of people knew about this situation. And yes, she had information about a detail and other issues in Brian Weiss's life. And finally, he came to the conclusion the only way she could be accessing this information about Egypt, about his own private life, plus create the healing that she created, the deep emotional healing, was to resolve a real issue in life. It just happened to be a past life. And so that situation happened in 1980. His book came out in 88. So he had about, you know, 6-7 years to kind of digest and to research and to look into this. And finally, his left brain, analytical, academic mind came to the conclusion that the only way this could have happened is that past lives are real. And there's a William James quote. He's one of the kind of pioneers of modern psychotherapy. He said, to prove that all crows aren't black, you only need one white crow. Well, I think that goes for this situation too. To prove that past lives are real, you only need somebody to have experienced a past life and prove that it's real. So in and of itself, I think past lives are real. They can be experienced. True healing and resolution of hurt and pain can happen due to past life memories and the healing that you can and create around that. Specifically up in the spirit world, there's a whole nother conversation right there. But again, back to your question of, is the experience the person is having that I'm working with as they lie back, maybe in a recliner, their eyes closed in this altered state of consciousness, is the experience they're having a real past life or just a manifestation of the subconscious mind to create healing? And I can't tell you one way or the other. So what I tell people in that instance is like, look, I believe past lives are real, 100% true. So what this is all about, whether that experience for you is real or just a manifestation of subconscious mind, is about the healing you receive from it, the resolution or the insights you gained about your life and how to move forward through some hurt and pain or some blocks or some walls or just how to create your best life. It's about the healing. And I think that brings some comfort to people because, you know, you can drive yourself crazy. It's a mind twist to just trying to figure it out whether it's real or not real. Okay, we'll put that aside. Let's just focus on the healing and the resolution needed here and wait, you know, until the afterlife, the life between lives to decide, you know, for sure whether it's real or not. But it's about what kind of change and positive transformation you can create by having this experience I mean, I think that's what it's all about, but at the end of the day.
So what do you think is the mechanics of the healing? There's these ideas that maybe it's releasing negative energy, or you need to break the bond with the past life, or it's something else. Do you have techniques you use if you've got a client and they've come to you for some issue and you go into a past life and you see something, yeah, that's pretty sure that's causing this current issue, then what do you do?
The person that's experienced in the past life, and whether we're doing like a shorter, like 90-minute session, or maybe a longer one, like a three and a half hour session, you experience a past life. And like if you live to be 99 years old, we can't experience all 99 years of that past life, obviously, even if we're doing a longer session, like three and a half hours, obviously can't do all 99 years. So the focus of the past life and of the session, and there needs to be a focus. We need to turn the channel to the of the TV to the right station to get the program we want to watch. So it's sort of like going back to that Encyclopedia Britannica, if people remember those books back in the 1970s, 1980s. And it's like this 32-volume set of A to Z of all the information of the world. That was our internet. And if you just pull a random book off the shelf, maybe you're looking at the fork or the invention of the napkin, and that's not very interesting. But if you know you need to look at polar bears, you want information about polar bears, you know exactly which book to look at. If you want to look at kangaroos, understand more about kangaroos, you know exactly which book to look at. So we want to focus on something. And so it may be go back to the past life that is the cause of all this anger I'm feeling in this life, the anxiety I'm feeling in this life. Go back to the past life where I have this deep fear of the ocean, of the deep ocean. You know, if I live up here in Flagstaff, Arizona. We're up here in the mountains. 7,000 feet. If somebody was born here and never left this town and yet had a deep fear of the deep ocean water, that'd be awfully strange. You know, maybe nowadays you could see a movie or a documentary or something, but you know, back in the day, 1970s, 60s, or even earlier, they were born and raised here and yet had a deep fear of the ocean. Why would that be? Maybe it's related to a past life. So you can have specific focus. Maybe it's a more general focus. Go back to the past life that is most influencing your current life. Maybe you want to just, you know, you're looking for discovery and some insights about your past lives. Go back to the past life, your most spiritual past life, or you work with your greatest spiritual teacher, or go back to past life where you interacted with your soulmate. Maybe multiple, you look at multiple lives in that way. But for focusing on something, let's just say the past life that is most influencing your current life. Again, if you've lived 99 years, we can't go through all 99 years. So what we're going to do is look at four or five significant events in that life that have to do with influencing your current life, or the anger you're experiencing in this life, or the anxiety you're experiencing, or something else. And you cross the bridge, you open the door, whatever, however we're moving into that past life, and we'll gain information about where you are. I'll ask questions about what you're wearing, what you're seeing, what you're experiencing. And we'll get an understanding of where you are, who you are, your name, what's going on. Are you with anybody? Do you recognize them? Do they seem familiar to you in this current life? And then we're going to move to another significant event, whether you're younger, older, or the same age. And so I'll count to three. One, two, three, and go. I'll be at the next point in that life that is significant to influencing your current life. You'll move to another point. We'll do that four or five times, and then we'll get to the end of that past life, the very last day. And this is really important. You're not going to experience it today. Remember, this is just a memory, not unlike me asking you about lunch last week. You know, last Tuesday, what did you have for lunch? Maybe you went to a restaurant or a cafe with a friend. What did you eat? How did it taste? What was the atmosphere? What did the restaurant look like? Was the server, were they nice? Were they irritable? What did you talk about with your friend? It's a memory. You're not back there at lunch. You're not going to get stuck at lunch, you know, looping it over and over again. I can ask you about being back in school. Tell me about being 16 years old back at school. Were you doing sports? Were you doing theater? Were you doing music? Were you smoking cigarettes, you know, out in the parking lot? Tell me about school. Tell me a memory of school. Well, you're not back in school. You're not back there. You're just having a memory, or, you know, your earliest memory. Were you 5 years old, 2 years old, How early back can you go in terms of your memories? Well, again, all we're doing is going a little bit further. It's the same pool. We're just, you know, asking about lunch or being back in school. That's the shallow end of the pool. All we're going to do is go to the deep end of the pool. So you're not going to get stuck in a past life. It's just a memory. So we get to the end of that life. Oftentimes, it may be, you know, old age or illness, or maybe it's something a little more intense. You're not going to experience it, or it's done in a very safe and gentle way. But that's where a lot of the connection can happen to this current life.
The book's called Past Lives Guidebook, Discover the Healing Power of Past Life Regression Therapy. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Get it on Amazon. That's the best way to do it. And, you know, of course, you can go to my website and find the links to it, Sacred Mystery Hypnotherapy. Happy to talk to anybody, you know, again, want to set up a phone call or a Zoom call or just email back and forth. Happy to answer any questions people might have about past life regression or doing any sort of spiritual work. And it's the time goes fast when talking about this because it's such a deep subject. And I appreciate you inviting me onto your show, Simon, because I know it's such a deep topic that it could go on and on. We could have a 8-hour conversation and still have more, you know, get more questions than we have answers.
Do you do sessions for people on Zoom so anybody in the planet could contact you?
Yeah. I do most of my sessions over Zoom nowadays. In one hand, I guess if there was some silver lining out of the whole COVID situation, it was that a lot of us, you know, in the therapeutic world, whether it's a talk therapist or a relationship counseling or life coaching or a hypnotherapy or a doctor's appointment, and go to Zoom. And what they found in terms of the research, the sociological research, is that Zoom sessions work as well as in person. In fact, there's been some research that shows Zoom sessions work better than in person. And that's because people feel comfortable and relaxed in their homes. They feel safe in their homes. They don't have the inconvenience of driving across town to get to the appointment. And so, yeah, it's allowed me to open up. In fact, this is why I've kind of done a second pivot of moving more into the spiritual work. Because again, I'm right near Sedona and there's such a spotlight for spiritual work. I thought I'd focus on the clinical, although I was doing past life regressions with people. Now that I have the ability to work with people around the world and just as maybe not so much of a brag or a flex, but maybe slightly, but I've been working recently with a professional basketball player in Lithuania. He's an American, but he's in the European League, and also a basketball player from Iceland who's now playing for a team in France. And the basketball player who's in France got my name from somebody who, his friend who lives in Puerto Rico. And, you know, I've worked with people in Tahiti, I've worked with people in Vienna, I've worked with people in Bulgaria, as well as all over the United States. And so, again, not so much of a brag, but as a indication of like how powerful this work is. And if you go to my websites, my clinical hypnotherapy website is Arizona Integrative Hypnotherapy. If you just go to Google and type in Flagstaff Hypnosis, you'll see Arizona Integrative Hypnotherapy come up in the search. But if you go there, if you go to Sacred Mystery Hypnotherapy, you'll see a testimonial from Samantha. And she says, this one session was more healing than 6 years of cognitive behavioral therapy. And that was a past life regression over Zoom. And so it works really, really well.
Yeah, I find it does. It's amazing. Well, again, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. I appreciate you inviting me. I hope, you know, again, this is such a huge conversation. And again, I'm happy to talk with anybody. If you want to go to the website, the sacredmysteryhypnotherapy.com website, there's a free recording you can get to connect with your spirit guide. And there's other recordings to connect with your past lives, with your soulmate or your purpose or healing. And of course, links to get the book. And so, yeah, happy to chat with anybody about this stuff. It's really fascinating.
This week, I was talking to Craig Merriweather about his book, Past Lives Guidebook, Discover the Healing Power of Past Life Regression Therapy. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you can get an extended episode every month. And you can try out these episodes with a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button at my homepage, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is out on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or on Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.